sedative. He frowned, but brushed his lips lightly over hers. If you like. He lifted her off her feet, flustering her. Let's see if we can find the right dosage. Later, with the light still on low, he watched her. She slept face down, a limp sprawl of exhaustion. To please himself, he stroked a hand down her back. Smooth skin, slim bones, lean muscle. She didn't stir. Experimentally, he let his fingers comb through her hair. Thick as mink pelt, shades of aged brandy and old gold, poorly cut. It made him smile as he traced those fingers over her lips. Full, firm, fiercely responsive. However surprised he was that he'd been able to take her beyond what she'd experienced before, he was overwhelmed by the knowledge that had, unknowingly, taken him. How much farther, he wondered, would they go? He knew it had ripped him when he'd believed she'd thought him guilty. The sense of betrayal, disillusionment, was huge, weakening, and something he hadn't felt in too many years to count. She'd taken him back to a point of vulnerability he'd escaped from. She could hurt him. They could hurt each other. That was something he would have to consider carefully. But at the moment, the pressing question was who wanted to hurt them both, and why? He was still gnawing at the problem when he took her hand, linked fingers, and let himself slide into sleep with her. Chapter 15. He was gone when she woke. It was better that way. Mornings after carried a casual intimacy that made her nervous. She was already more involved with him than she had ever been with anyone. That click between them had the potential, she knew, to reverberate through the rest of her life. She took a quick shower, bundled into a robe, then headed into the kitchen. There was Rourke, in trousers and a shirt he'd yet to button, scanning the morning paper on her monitor. Looking, she realized with a quick tug-of-war of delight and dismay, very much at home. "What are you doing?" "Hmm?" He glanced up, reached behind him to open the auto chef. "Making you coffee." "Making me coffee? I heard you moving around." He took the cups out, carried them to where she was still hovering in the doorway. "You don't do that often enough." "Move around?" "No." He chuckled and touched his lips to hers. "Smile at me. Just smile at me." Was she smiling? She hadn't realized. "I thought you'd left." She walked around the small table, glanced at the monitor. The stock reports, naturally. "You must have gotten up early." "I had some calls to make." He watched her, enjoying the way she raked her fingers through her damp hair, a nervous habit he was certain she was unaware of. He picked up the Portalink he'd left on the table, slipped it back into his pocket. "I had a conference call scheduled with the station, 5 a.m., our time." "Oh." She sipped her coffee, wondering how she had ever lived without the zip of the real thing in the morning. "I know those meetings were important." "I'm sorry." "We'd managed to hammer down most of the details. I can handle the rest from here." "You're not going back?" "No." She turned to the auto chef, fiddled with her rather limited menu. "I'm out of most everything. Want a bagel or something?" "Eve." Rourke set his coffee down, laid his hands on her shoulders. "Why don't you want me to know you're pleased I'm staying?" "Your alibi holds. It's none of my business if you..." She broke off when he turned her to face him. He was angry. She could see it in his eyes and prepared for the argument to come. She hadn't prepared for the kiss, the way his mouth closed firmly over hers, the way her heart rolled over slow and dreamy in her chest. So she let herself be held, let her head nestle in the curve of his shoulder. "I don't know how to handle this," she murmured. "I don't have any precedent here. I need rules, Rourke. Solid rules. I'm not a case you need to solve. I don't know what you are, but I know this is going too fast. It shouldn't have even started. I shouldn't have been able to get started with you." He drew her back so that he could study her face. Why? It's complicated. I have to get dressed. I have to get to work. Give me something. His fingers tightened on her shoulders. I don't know what you are either. I'm a cop, she blurted out. That's all I am. I'm 30 years old, and I've only been close to 2 people in my entire life, and even with them, it's easy to hold back. Hold back what? Letting it matter too much. If it matters too much, it can grind you down until you're nothing. I've been nothing. I can't be nothing ever again. Who hurt you? I don't know. But she did. She did. I don't remember, and I don't want to remember. I've been a victim, and once you have, you need to do whatever it takes not to be one again. That's all I was before I got into the academy. A victim, with other people pushing the buttons, making the decisions, pushing me one way, pulling me another. Is that what you think I'm doing? That's what's happening. There were questions he needed to ask. Questions, he could see by her face, that needed to wait. Perhaps it was time he took a risk. He dipped a hand into his pocket, drew out what he carried there. Baffled, Eve stared down at the simple gray button in his palm. That's off my suit. Yes. Not a particularly flattering suit. You need stronger colors. I found it in my limo. I meant to give it back to you. Oh. But when she reached out, he closed his fingers over the button. A very smooth lie. Amused, he laughed at himself. I had no intention of giving it back to you. You got a button fetish, Rourke? I've been carrying this around like a schoolboy carries a lock of his sweetheart's hair. Her eyes came back to his, and something sweet moved through her. Sweeter yet, as she could see, he was embarrassed. That's weird. I thought so myself. But he slipped the button back in his pocket. Do you know what else I think, Eve? I don't have a clue. I think I'm in love with you. She felt the color drain out of her cheeks, felt her muscles go lax, even as her heart shot like a missile to her throat. That's... yes. Difficult to come up with the proper word, isn't it? He slid his hands down her back, up again, but brought her no closer. I've been giving it a lot of thought and haven't hit on one myself, but I should circle back to my point. She moistened her lips. There's a point. A very interesting and important point. I'm every bit as much in your hands as you are in mine. Every bit as uncomfortable, though perhaps not as resistant, to finding myself in that position. I'm not going to let you walk away until we've figured out what to do about it. It complicates things. Outrageously, he agreed. Rourke, we don't even know each other. Outside of the bedroom. Yes, we do. 2 lost souls. We've both turned away from something and made ourselves something else. It's hardly a wonder that fate decided to throw a curve into what had been, for both of us, a straight path. We have to decide how far we want to follow the curve. I have to concentrate on the investigation. It has to be my priority. I understand. But you're entitled to a personal life. My personal life, this part of it, grew out of the investigation, and the killer's making it more personal. Planting that gun so that suspicion would swing toward you was a direct response to my involvement with you. He's focused on me. Rourke's hand jerked up to the lapels of her robe. What do you mean? Rules, she reminded herself. There were rules, and she was about to break them. I'll tell you what I can while I'm getting dressed. Eve went to the bedroom with the cat sliding and weaving in front of her. Do you remember that night you were here when I got home? The package that you'd found on the floor? Yes, it upset you. With a half laugh, she peeled out of her robe. I've got a rep for having the best poker face in the station. I made my first million gambling. Really? She tugged a sweater over her head, reminded herself not to be distracted. It was a recording of Lola Starr's murder. He sent me Sharon de Blas's as well. A cold lance of fear stabbed. He was in your apartment. She was busy discovering she had no clean underwear and didn't notice the iced edge of his voice. Maybe, maybe not. I think not. No signs of forced entry. He could have shoved it under the door. That's what he did the first time. He mailed Georgie's disc. We had the building under surveillance. Resigned, she pulled slacks over bare skin. He either knew it or smelled it. But he saw I got the discs, all three of them. He knew I was primary almost before I did. She searched for socks, got lucky, and found a pair that matched. He called me, transmitted the video of Georgie Castle's murder scene minutes after he'd whacked her. She sat on the edge of the bed, pulled on the socks. He planted a weapon, made sure it was traceable, to you. Not to knock how inconvenient a murder charge would have made your life, Rourke, but if I hadn't had the commander behind me on this, I'd have been off the case and out of the department in a blink. He knows what goes on inside Cop Central. He knows what's going on in my life. Fortunately, he didn't know that I wasn't even on the planet. That was a break for both of us. She located her boots, tugged them on. But it's not going to stop him. She rose, picked up her holster. He's still going to try to get to me, and you're his best bet. Rourke watched her automatically check her laser before strapping it on. Why you? He doesn't have a high opinion of women. I'd have to say it burns his ass to have a female heading the investigation. It lowers his status. She shrugged, raked her fingers through her hair to whip it into place. At least that's the shrink's opinion. Philosophically, she pried the cat free when he started to climb up her leg, gave him a light toss to the bed where he turned his butt in her direction, and began to wash. And is it the shrink's opinion that he could try to eliminate you by more direct means? I don't fit the pattern. Fighting back the slippery edge of fear, Rourke fisted his hands in his pockets. And if he breaks the pattern? I can handle myself. It's worth risking your life for three women who are already dead? Yes. She heard the fury pulsing in his voice and faced it. It's worth risking my life to find justice for three women who are already dead, and to try to prevent three more from dying. He's only half through. He's left a note under each body. He's wanted us to know right from the start that he had a plan, and he's daring us to stop him. One of six, two of six, three of six. I'll do whatever it takes to keep him from having the fourth. Full out guts. That's what I first admired about you. Now it terrifies me. For the first time, she moved to him, laid a hand on his cheek. Almost as soon as she had, she dropped her hand and stepped back again, embarrassed. I've been a cop for 10 years, Rourke. Never had more than some bumps and bruises. Don't worry about it. I think you're going to have to get used to having someone worry about you, Eve. That hadn't been the plan. She walked out of the bedroom to get her jacket and bag. I'm telling you this so that you'll understand what I'm up against. Why I can't split my energies and start analyzing what's between us. There'll always be cases. I hope to God there won't always be cases like this one. This isn't murder for gain or out of passion. It isn't desperate or frenzied. It's cold and calculated. It's evil. Yes. It relieved her that he'd said it first. It didn't sound so foolish. Whatever we've done in genetic engineering, in vitro, with social programs, we still can't control basic human failings. Violence, lust, envy. The seven deadly sins. She thought of the old woman and her poisoned pie. Yeah. I've got to go. Will you come to me when you're off duty tonight? I don't know when I'll log out. It could be, will you come? Yeah. Then he smiled, and she knew he was waiting for her to make the move. She was sure he knew just how hard it was for her to cross to him, to bring her lips up, to press them, however casually, to his. See you. Eve. You should have gloves. She decoded the door, tossed a quick smile over her shoulder. I know, but I just keep losing them. Her up mood lasted until she walked into her office and found de Blas and his aide waiting for her. Deliberately, de Blas stared at his gold watch. More banker's hours than police hours, Lieutenant Dallas. She knew damn well it was only minutes past eight, but shrugged out of her jacket. Yeah, it's a pretty lush life around here. Is there something I can do for you, Senator? I'm aware there's been yet another murder. I'm obviously dissatisfied with your progress. However, I'm here for damage control. I do not want my granddaughter's name linked with the two other victims. You want Simpson for that, or his press secretary. Don't smirk at me, young woman. De Blas leaned forward. My granddaughter is dead. Nothing can change that. But I will not have the de Blas name sullied, muddied by the death of two common whores. You seem to have a low opinion of women, Senator. She was careful not to smirk this time, but watched him and considered. On the contrary, I revere them, which is why those who sell themselves, those who disregard morality and common decency, revolt me. Including your granddaughter? He lurched out of his chair, his face purpling, eyes bulging. Eve was quite certain he would have struck her if Rockman hadn't stepped between them. Senator, the lieutenant is only baiting you. Don't give her the satisfaction. You will not besmirch my family. De Blas was breathing fast, and Eve wondered if he had any history of heart trouble. My granddaughter paid dearly for her sins, and I will not see the rest of my loved ones dragged down into public ridicule, and I will not tolerate your vile insinuations. Just trying to get my facts straight. It was fascinating watching him battle for composure. He was having a rough time of it, she noted, hands shaking, chest heaving. I'm trying to find the man who killed Sharon, Senator. I assume that's also high on your agenda. Finding him won't get her back. He sat again, obviously exhausted by the outburst. What's important now is to protect what's left. To do that, Sharon must be segregated from the other women. She didn't like his opinion, but neither did she care for his color. It was still alarmingly high. Can I get you some water, Senator de Blas? He nodded, waved at her. Eve slipped into the corridor and dispensed a cup of bottled water. When she came back, his breathing was more regular, his hands a bit steadier. The senator has been overtaxing himself, Rockman put in. His morals bill goes before the House tomorrow. The pressure of this family tragedy is a great weight. I appreciate that. I'm doing everything I can to close the case. She tilted her head. Political pressure is also a great weight on an investigation. I don't care to be monitored on my personal time. Rockman gave her a mild smile. I'm sorry. Could you qualify that? I was monitored, and my personal relationship with a civilian reported to Chief Simpson. It's no secret that Simpson and the senator are tight. The senator and Chief Simpson have a personal and a political allegiance, Rockman agreed. However, it would hardly be ethical, or in the senator's best interest, to monitor a member of the police force. I assure you, Lieutenant, Senator de Blas has been much too involved with his own grief and his responsibilities to the country to worry about your personal relationships. It has come to our attention, however, through Chief Simpson, that you've had a number of liaisons with Rourke. An amoral opportunist. The senator set his cup aside with a snap. A man who would stop at nothing to add to his own power. A man, Eve added, who has been cleared of any connection with this investigation. Money buys immunity, de Blas said in disgust. Not in this office. I'm sure you'll request the report from the commander. In the meantime, whether or not it assuages your grief, I intend to find the man who killed your granddaughter. I suppose I should commend your dedication. De Blas rose. See that your dedication doesn't jeopardize my family's reputation. What changed your mind, Senator? Eve wondered. The first time we spoke, you threatened to have my job if I didn't bring Sharon's murderer to justice, and quickly.
She's buried, was all he said, and strode out.
Lieutenant, Rockman kept his voice low. I will repeat that the pressure on Senator de Blas is enormous, enough to crush a lesser man. He let out a slow breath. The fact is, it's destroyed his wife. She's had a breakdown. I'm sorry. The doctors don't know if she'll recover. This additional tragedy has his son crazed with grief. His daughter has closed herself off from her family and gone into retreat. The senator's only hope of restoring his family is to let Sharon's death, the horror of it, pass.
Then it might be wise for the senator to take a step back and leave due process to the department.
Lieutenant. Eve, he said with that rare and quick flash of charm. I wish I could convince him of that. But I believe that would be as fruitless an endeavor as convincing you to let Sharon rest in peace.
You'd be right.
Well, then. He laid a hand on her arm briefly. We must all do what we can to set things right. It was good to see you again.
Eve closed the door behind him and considered. De Blas certainly had the kind of hair-trigger temper that could lead to violence. She was almost sorry he didn't also have the control, the calculation, to have meticulously planned 3 murders. In any case, she'd have a hard time connecting a rabidly right-wing senator to a couple of New York prostitutes. Maybe he was protecting his family, she mused. Or maybe he was protecting Simpson, a political ally.
That was crap, Eve decided. He might work on Simpson's behalf if the chief was involved in the Star and Castle homicides, but a man didn't protect the killer of his grandchild.
Too bad she wasn't looking for 2 men, Eve mused. Regardless, she was going to do some pecking away at Simpson's underpinnings. Objectively, she warned herself. And it wouldn't do to forget that there was a strong possibility that de Blas didn't know one of his favorite political cronies had been blackmailed by his only granddaughter. She'd have to find out. But for now, she had another hunch to follow. She located Charles Monroe's number and put through a call. His voice was smeared with sleep, his eyes heavy.
You spend all your time in bed, Charles?
All I can, Lieutenant Sugar.
He rubbed a hand over his face and grinned at her.
That's how I think of you.
Well, don't. Couple of questions.
Can't you come over and ask in person? I'm warm and naked and all alone.
Pal, don't you know there's a law against soliciting a police officer?
I'm talking freebie here. I told you, we'd keep it strictly personal.
We're keeping it strictly impersonal. You had an associate, Georgie Castle. Did you know her? The seductive smile faded from his face.
Yeah, actually, I did.
Not well, but I met her at a party about a year ago.
She was new in the business.
Fun. Attractive.
Game, you know? We hit it off.
In what way?
In a friendly way. We had a drink now and again. Once, when Sharon had an overbooking, I had her send a couple of clients Georgie's way.
They knew each other. Eve pounced on it. Sharon and Georgie.
I don't think so. As far as I remember, Sharon contacted Georgie, asked her if she was interested in a couple of fresh tricks. Georgie gave her the green light, and that was that.
Oh, yeah. Sharon said something about Georgie sending her 12 roses.
Real ones, like a thank you gift.
Sharon got a real kick out of the old-fashioned etiquette.
Just an old-fashioned girl, Eve said under her breath.
When I heard Georgie was dead, it hit hard. I gotta tell you. With Sharon, it was a jolt, but not that much of a surprise. She lived on the edge. But Georgie, she was centered, you know? I may need to follow up on this, Charles. Stay available.
For you,
knock it off, she ordered, before he could get cute. What do you know about Sharon's diaries?
She never let me read one, he said easily. I used to tease her about them.
Seems to me she said she'd kept them since she was a kid.
You got one?
Hey, am I in it?
Where'd she keep them?
In her apartment, I guess.
Where else? That was the question, Eve mused. If you think of anything else about Georgie or about the diaries, contact me.
Day or night, Lieutenant Sugar. Count on me.
Right.
But she was laughing when she broke transmission. The sun was just setting when she arrived at Rourke's. She didn't consider herself off-duty. The favor she was going to ask had been simmering in her mind all day. She'd decided on it, rejected it, and generally vacillated until she'd disgusted herself. In the end, she'd left the station for the first time in months right on the dot of the end of her shift. With what limited progress she'd made, she'd hardly needed to be there at all. Feeney had hit nothing but a dead end in his search for a second lockbox. He had, with obvious reluctance, given her the list of cops she'd requested. Eve intended to run a make on each of them, on her own time and in her own way. With some regret, she realized she was going to use Rourke. Somerset opened the door with his usual disdain.
"You're earlier than expected, Lieutenant."
"If he isn't in, I can wait."
"He's in the library."
"Which is where, exactly?" Somerset permitted himself the tiniest huff. If Rourke hadn't ordered him to show the woman in immediately, he would have shuffled her off to some small, poorly lit room.
"This way, please."
"What exactly is it about me that rubs you wrong, Somerset?" With his back poker straight, he led her up a flight and down the wide corridor.
"I have no idea what you mean, Lieutenant."
"The library," he announced in reverent terms, and opened the door for her. She'd never in her life seen so many books. She never would have believed so many existed outside of museums. The walls were lined with them, so that the two-level room positively reeked with books. On the lower level, on what was surely a leather sofa, Rourke lounged, a book in his hand, the cat on his lap.
"Eve, you're early."
He set the book aside, picked up the cat as he rose.
"Jesus, Rourke, where did you get all these?"
"The books?" He let his gaze roam the room. Firelight danced and shifted over colorful spines. "Another of my interests."
"Don't you like to read?"
"Sure, now and again. But discs are so much more convenient."
"And so much less aesthetic."
He stroked the cat's neck and sent him into ecstasy.
"You're welcome to borrow any you like."
"I don't think so."
"How about a drink?"
"I could handle that." His link beeped.
"This is the call I've been waiting for. Why don't you get us both a glass of wine I've had breathing over on the table?"
"Sure." She took the cat from him and walked over to oblige. Because she wanted to eavesdrop, she forced herself to stay the length of the room away from where he sat, murmuring. It gave her a chance to browse the books, to puzzle over the titles. Some she had heard of. Even with a state education, she'd been required to read Steinbeck and Chaucer, Shakespeare and Dickens. The curriculum had taken her through King and Grisham, Morrison and Grafton. But there were dozens, perhaps hundreds of names here she'd never heard of. She wondered if anyone could handle so many books, much less read them. "I'm sorry," he said when the call was complete. "That couldn't wait."
"No problem."
He took the wine she'd poured him. "The cat's becoming quite attached to you." "I don't think he has any particular loyalties." But Eve had to admit she enjoyed the way he curled under her stroking hand. "I don't know what I'm going to do about him. I called Georgie's daughter and she said she just couldn't face taking him. Pressing the matter only made her cry."
"You could keep him."
"I don't know. You have to take care of pets."
"Cats are remarkably self-sufficient."
He sat on the sofa and waited for her to join him.
"Want to tell me about your day?"
"Not very productive. Yours?"
"Very productive."
"A lot of books," Eve said lamely, knowing she was stalling. "I have an affection for them. I could barely read my name when I was 6. Then I came across a battered copy of Yeats, an Irish writer of some note," he said when Eve looked blank. "I badly wanted to figure it out, so I taught myself."
Didn't you go to school?
Not if I could help it.
You've got trouble in your eyes, Eve, he murmured.
She blew out a breath. What was the use of stalling when he could see right through her?
I've got a problem. I want to do a run on Simpson. Obviously, I can't go through channels or use either my home or office units. The minute I tried to dig on the chief of police, I'd be flagged.
And you're wondering if I have a secured, unregistered system.
Of course I do.
Of course, she muttered. A non-registered system is in violation of Code 453B, Section 35.
I can't tell you how aroused it makes me when you quote codes, Lieutenant.
It's not funny. And what I'm going to ask you to do is illegal. It's a serious offense to electronically breach the privacy of a state official.
You could arrest both of us afterwards.
This is serious, Rourke. I go by the book, and now I'm asking you to help me break the law.
He rose, drew her to her feet. Darling Eve, you have no idea how many I've already broken.
He fetched the wine bottle, letting it dangle from two fingers of the hand he slipped around her waist.
I ran an underground dice game when I was 10, he began, leading her from the room. A legacy for my dear old father, who'd earned himself a knife through the gullet in a Dublin alley.
I'm sorry.
We weren't close. He was a bastard, and no one loved him, least of all me.
Somerset, we'll have dinner at 7:30, Rourke added as he turned toward the stairs.
But he taught me, by means of a fist to the face, to read the dice, the cards, the odds.
He was a thief, not a good one, as his end proved.
I was better. I stole, I cheated. I spent some time learning the smuggling trade. So you see, you're hardly corrupting me with such a nominal request.
She didn't look at him as he decoded a locked door on the second floor.
Do I steal, cheat, and smuggle now?
He turned and touched a hand to her face.
Oh, you'd hate that, wouldn't you?
I almost wish I could say yes, then give it all up for you. I learned a long time ago that there are gambles more exciting for their legitimacy, and winning is so much more satisfying when you've dealt from the top of the deck.
He pressed a kiss to her brow, then stepped into the room.
But we have to keep our hand in.
Chapter 16. Compared to the rest of the house she'd seen, this room was Spartan, designed rigidly for work. No fancy statues, dripping chandeliers. The wide U-shaped console, the base for communication, research and information, retrieving devices, was unrelieved black, studded with controls, sliced with slots and screens. Eve had heard that IRCCA had the swankiest base system in the country. She suspected Rourke's matched it. Eve was no compu-jock, but she knew at a glance that the equipment here was vastly superior to any the New York Police and Security Department used or could afford, even in the lofty electronic detection division. The long wall facing the console was taken up by six large monitor screens. A second, auxiliary station, held a sleek little telelink, a second laser fax, a hologram send-receive unit, and several other pieces of hardware she didn't recognize. The trio of comp stations boosted personal monitors with attached links. The floor was glazed tile, the diamond patterns in muted colors that bled together like liquid. The single window looked over the city and pulsed with the last lights of the setting sun. It seemed even here, Rourke demanded ambiance.
Quite a setup, Eve commented.
Not quite as comfortable as my office, but it has the basics.
He moved behind the main console, placed his palm on the identiscreen.
Rourke, open operations.
After a discreet hum, the lights on the console glowed on. New palm and voice print clearance, he continued, and gestured to Eve. Cleared for yellow status. At his nod, Eve pressed her hand to the screen, felt the faint warmth of the reading.
Dallas.
There you are.
Rourke took his seat. The system will accept your voice and hand commands.
What's yellow status? He smiled. Enough to give you everything you need to know, not quite enough to override my commands.
Hmm.
She scanned the controls, the patiently blinking lights, the myriad screens and gauges. She wished for Feeney and his computer-minded brain. Search on Edward T. Simpson, Chief of Police and Security, New York City. All financial data.
Going right to the heart? Rourke murmured. I don't have time to waste.
This can't be traced?
Not only can't it be traced, but there'll be no record of the search.
Simpson, Edward T.,
the computer announced in a warm female tone.
Financial records. Searching.
At Eve's lifted brow, Rourke grinned. I prefer to work with melodious voices.
I was going to ask, she returned, how you can access data without alerting the CompuGuard.
No systems foolproof or completely breach-resistant, even the ubiquitous CompuGuard. The system is an excellent deterrent to your average hacker or electronic thief, but with the right equipment, it can be compromised. I have the right equipment.
Here comes the data. I'm viewing screen one, he ordered. Eve glanced up and saw Simpson's credit report flash onto the large monitor. It was the standard business. Vehicle loans, mortgages, credit card balances, all the automatic e-transactions.
That's a hefty Amex bill, she mused. And I don't think it's common knowledge he owns a place on Long Island.
Hardly murderous motives.
He maintains a Class A rating, which means he pays what he owes. Ah, here's a bank account. Screen two.
Eve studied the numbers, dissatisfied. Nothing out of line. Pretty average deposits and withdrawals. Mostly automatic bill paying, transfers that jibe with the credit report.
What's Jeremy's?
Men's clothier, Rourke told her with the smallest sneer of disdain. Somewhat second-rate. She wrinkled her nose.
Hell of a lot to spend on clothes.
Darling, I'm going to have to corrupt you. It's only too much if they're inferior clothes.
She sniffed, stuck her thumbs in the front pockets of her baggy brown trousers.
Here's his brokerage account. Screen three.
Spineless, Rourke added after a quick scan.
What do you mean?
His investments, such as they are, all no risk. Government issue, a few mutual funds, a smattering of blue chip, everything on planet.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing if you're content to let your money gather dust.
He slanted her a look.
Do you invest, Lieutenant?
Yeah, right.
She was still trying to make sense of the abbreviations and percentage points.
I watch the stock reports twice a day.
Not a standard credit account.
He nearly shuddered.
So what? Give me what you have, I'll double it within 6 months.
She only frowned, struggling to read the brokerage report.
I'm not here to get rich.
Darling, he corrected in that flowing Irish lilt, we all are.
How about contributions, political, charities, that kind of thing?
Access tax-saving outlay, Rourke ordered. Viewing screen two.
She waited, impatiently tapping a hand on her thigh. Data scrolled on.
He puts his money where his heart is, she muttered, scanning his payments to the Conservative Party, de Blas's campaign fund.
Not particularly generous otherwise.
Hmm. Rourke's brow lifted. Interesting. A very hefty gift to moral values.
That's an extremist group, isn't it?
I'd call it that. The faithful prefer to think of it as an organization dedicated to saving all of us sinners from ourselves.
De Blas is a strong proponent.
But she was flipping through her own mental files. They're suspected of sabotaging the main databanks at several large contraception control clinics.
Rourke clucked his tongue. All those women deciding for themselves if and when they want to conceive. How many children they want. What's the world coming to?
Obviously, someone has to bring them back to their senses.
Right.
Dissatisfied, Eve stuck her hands in her pockets.
It's a dangerous connection for someone like Simpson.
He likes to play middle of the road. He ran on a moderate ticket,
cloaking his conservative ties and leanings. In the last few years, he's been cautiously removing the layers. He wants to be governor. Perhaps believes de Blas can put him there. Politics is a bartering game.
Politics. Sharon de Blas's blackmail disc was heavy on politicians.
Sex, murder, politics, she murmured. The more things change.
Yes, the more they remain the same.
Couples still indulge in courting rituals. Humans still kill humans, and politicians still kiss babies and lie.
Something wasn't quite right, and she wished for Feeney again.
20th-century murders, she thought. 20th-century motives.
There was one other thing that hadn't changed over the last millennium. Taxes. Can we get his IRS data, the past 3 years?
That's a little trickier.
His mouth had already quirked up at the challenge. It's also a federal offense. Listen, Rourke, just hold on a minute.
He pressed a button, and a manual keyboard slipped out of the console. With some surprise, Eve watched his fingers fly over the keys.
Where'd you learn to do that?
Even with required department training, she was barely competent on manual.
Here and there, he said absently, in my misspent youth.
I have to get around the security. It's going to take some time. Why don't you pour us some more wine?
Rourke, I shouldn't have asked. An attack of conscience had her walking to him.
I can't let this come back on you.
Shh!
His brows drew together in concentration as he maneuvered his way through the security labyrinth.
But his head snapped up, impatience vivid in his eyes.
We've already opened the door, Eve. Now we go through, or we turn away from it.
Eve thought of three women, dead because she hadn't been able to stop it, hadn't known enough to stop it. With a nod, she turned away again. The clatter of the keyboard resumed.
She poured the wine, then moved to stand in front of the screens.
Tidy as they came, she mused. Top credit rating, prompt payment of debts, conservative and, she assumed, relatively small investments.
Surely that was more money than average spent on clothes, wine shops, and jewelry. But it wasn't a crime to have expensive taste. Not when you paid for it. Even the second home wasn't a criminal offense.
Some of the contributions were dicey for a registered moderate, but still not criminal.
She heard Rourke curse softly and looked back, but he was hunkered over the keyboard. She might not have been there.
Odd. She wouldn't have guessed he had the technical skills to access manually.
According to Feeney, it was almost a lost art except in tech clerks and hackers.
Yet here he was, the rich, the privileged, the elegant, clattering over a problem usually delegated to a low-paid, overworked office drone. For a moment, she let herself forget about the business at hand and smiled at him.
You know, Rourke, you're kind of cute.
She realized it was the first time she'd really surprised him. His head came up, and his eyes were startled, for perhaps two heartbeats. Then that sly smile came into them, the one that made her own pulse jitter.
You're going to have to do better than that, Lieutenant.
I've got you in.
No shit!
Excitement flooded through her as she whirled back to the screens.
Put it up! Screens 4, 5, 6.
There's his bottom line. She frowned over gross income.
It's about right, wouldn't you say, salary-wise?
A bit of interest and dividends from investments.
Rourke scrolled pages.
A few honorariums for personal appearances and speeches.
He lives close, but just within his means, according to all of the data shown.
Hell. She tossed back wine. What other data is there?
For a sharp woman, that's an incredibly naive question.
Underground accounts, he explained. Two sets of books is a tried and true and very traditional method of hiding illicit income.
If you had illicit income, why would you be stupid enough to document it?
A question for the ages. But people do. Oh, yes, they do.
Yes, he said, answering her unspoken question as to his own bookkeeping methods.
Of course I do.
She shot him a hard look.
I don't want to know about it.
He only moved his shoulders.
The point being, because I do, I know how it's done. Everything's above board here, wouldn't you say? With a few commands, he had the IRS reports merged on one screen. Now let's go down a level. Computer, Simpson, Edward T., foreign accounts.
No known data.
There's always more data, Rourke murmured, undeterred. He went back to the keyboard, and something began to hum. What's that noise?
It's just telling me I'm hitting a wall.
Like a laborer, he flicked open the buttons at his cuffs, rolled up his sleeves. The gesture made Eve smile.
And if there's a wall, there's something behind it.
He continued to work, one-handed, and sipped his wine. When he repeated his command, the response had shifted.
Data protected.
Ah, now we've got it. How can you...
Shh,
he ordered again, and had Eve subsiding into impatient silence. Computer, run numerical and alphabetical combinations for passkey. Pleased with the progress, he pushed back. This will take a little time. Why don't you come here? Can you show me how you...
She broke off, shocked when Rourke pulled her into his lap.
Hey, this is important.
So's this.
He took her mouth, sliding his hand up her hip to just under the curve of her breast.
It could take an hour, maybe more, to find the key.
Those quick, clever hands were already moving under her sweater.
You don't like to waste time, as I recall.
No, I don't. It was the first time in her life she'd ever sat on anyone's lap, and the sensation wasn't at all unpleasant. She was sinking, but the next mechanical hum had her pulling back. Speechless, she stared at the bed gliding out of a panel in the side wall.
The man who has everything, she managed.
I will have. He hooked an arm under her legs, lifted her. Very shortly.
Rourke!
She had to admit, maybe just this once, she enjoyed being swept up and carried off.
Yes.
I always thought too much emphasis in society, advertisement, entertainment, was put on sex.
Did you?
I did. Grinning, she shifted her body, quick and agile, and overbalanced him.
I've changed my mind, she said, as they tumbled onto the bed.
She'd already learned that lovemaking could be intense, overwhelming, even dangerously exciting. She hadn't known it could be fun. It was a revelation to find that she could laugh and wrestle over the bed like a child. Quick, nipping kisses, ticklish groping, breathless giggles. She couldn't remember ever giggling before in her life as she pinned Rourke to the mattress.
Gotcha.
You do indeed. Delighted with her, he let her hold him down, rain kisses over his face.
Now that you have me, what are you going to do about it?
Use you, of course. She bit down, none too gently, on his bottom lip.
Enjoy you.
With her brows arched, she unfastened his shirt, spread it open.
You do have a terrific body.
To please herself, she ran her hands over his chest.
I used to think that sort of thing was overrated, too.
After all, anyone with enough money can have one.
I didn't buy mine, Rourke said, surprised into defending his physique.
No, you've got a gym in this place, don't you? Bending, she let her lips cruise over his shoulder. You'll have to show it to me sometime.
I think I'd like watching you sweat.
He rolled her over, reversing positions. He felt her freeze, then relax under his restraining hands. Progress, he thought. The beginnings of trust.
I'm ready to work out with you, Lieutenant, any time.
He tugged the sweater over her head.
Any time at all.
He released her hands. It moved him to have her reach up, draw him down to her to embrace. So strong, he thought, as the tone of the lovemaking changed from playful to tender. So soft. So troubled. He took her slowly and very gently over the first rise, watched her crest, listened to the low humming moan as her system absorbed each velvet shock. He needed her. It still had the power to shake him to know just how much he needed her. He knelt, lifting her. Her legs wrapped silkily around him, her body bowed fluidly back. He could take his mouth over her, tasting warm flesh while he moved inside her, deep, steady, slow. Each time she shuddered, a fresh stream of pleasure rippled through him. Her throat was a slim white feast he couldn't resist. He laved it, nipped, nuzzled while the pulse just under that sensitized flesh throbbed like a heart. And she gasped his name, cupping his head in her hands, pressing him against her as her body rocked, rocked, rocked. She discovered lovemaking made her loose and warm. The slow arousal, the long, slow finish energized her. She didn't feel awkward climbing back into her clothes with the scent of him clinging to her. She felt smug. "I feel good around you." It surprised her to say it aloud, to give him or anyone even so slight an advantage. He understood that such an admission for her was tantamount to a shouted declaration of devotion from other women. "I'm glad." He traced a fingertip down her cheek, dipped it into the faint dent in her chin. "I like the idea of staying around you." She turned away at that, crossed over to watch the number sequences fly by on the console screen. "Why did you tell me about being a kid in Dublin? About your father, the things you did? You won't stay with someone you don't know." He studied her back as he tucked his shirt into his trousers. "You told me a little, so I told you a little. And I think, eventually, you'll tell me who hurt you when you were a child." "I told you, I don't remember." She hated even the whisper of panic in her voice. "I don't need to." "Don't tighten up," he murmured to her as he walked over to massage her shoulders. "I won't press you. I know exactly what it is to remake yourself, Eve, to distance yourself from what was." What good would it do to tell her that no matter how far, how fast you ran, the past always stayed two paces behind you? Instead, he wrapped his arms around her waist, satisfied when she closed her hands over his. He knew she was studying the screens across the room. Knew the instant she saw it. "Son of a bitch! Look at the numbers. Income, outgo. They're too damn close. They're practically exact." "They are exact," Rourke corrected, and released the woman, knowing the cop would want to stand clear. "To the penny." "But that's impossible." She struggled to do the math in her head. "Nobody spends exactly what they make, not on record. Everyone carries at least a little cash for the occasional vendor on the sidewalk, the Pepsi machine, the kid who brings the pizza. Sure, it's mostly plastic or electronic, but you've got to have some cash floating around." She paused, turned around. "You'd already seen it." "Why the hell didn't you say something?" "I thought it would be more interesting to wait until we found his cash." He glanced down as the blinking yellow light for searching switched to green. "And it appears we have. Ah, a traditional man, our Simpson. As I suspected, he relies on the well-respected and discreet Swiss. Display data on screen 5. "Jesus fucking Christ." Eve gaped at the bank listings. "That's in Swiss francs," Rourke explained. "Translate to USD, screen 6. About triple his tax portfolio here, wouldn't you say, Lieutenant?" Her blood was up. "I knew he was taking. God damn it, I knew it! And look at the withdrawals, Rourke, in the last year! $25,000 a quarter, every quarter. $100,000!" She turned back to Rourke and her smile was thin. "That matches the figure on Sharon's list. Simpson, $100K. She was bleeding him. "You may be able to prove it. I damn well will prove it." She began to pace. She had something on him. Maybe it was sex. Maybe it was graft. Probably a combination of a lot of ugly little sins. So he paid her to keep her quiet. Eve thrust her hands into her pockets, pulled them out again. Maybe she upped the ante. Maybe he was just sick and tired of shelling out $100 a year for insurance.
So he offs her. Somebody keeps trying to scuttle the investigation. Somebody with the power and the information to complicate things. It points right at him. What about the two other victims?
She was working on it. God damn it, she was working on it.
He used one prostitute. He could have used others. Sharon and the third victim knew each other, or of each other. One of them might have known Lola, mentioned her, even suggested her as a change of pace. Hell, she could have been a random choice. He got caught up in the thrill of the first murder. It scared him, but it was also a high for him.
She stopped prowling the room long enough to flick a glance at Rourke. He'd taken out a cigarette, lighted it, watching her.
De Blas is one of his backers, she continued, and Simpson's come out strongly in favor of De Blas's upcoming morals bill. They're just prostitutes, he's thinking, just legal whores, and one of them was threatening him. How much more of a danger to him would she have been once he put in his bid for governor?
She stopped pacing again, turned back. And that's just shit.
I thought it sounded quite reasonable.
Not when you look at the man.
Slowly, she rubbed her fingers between her brows. He doesn't have the brains for it.
Yeah, I think he could kill. Christ knows he's into control, but to pull off a series of murders this slick?
He's a desk man, an administrator, an image, not a cop. He can't even remember a penal code without an aide prompting him. Graphs, easy. It's just business. And to kill out of panic or passion or fury, yes. But to plan, to execute the plan step by step?
No.
He isn't even smart enough to juggle his public records well.
So he had help.
Possible. Maybe if I could put pressure on him, I'd find out.
I can help you there.
Rourke took a final thoughtful drag before crushing out a cigarette. What do you think the media would do if it received an anonymous transmission of Simpson's underground accounts?
She dropped the hand she'd lifted to rake through her hair.
They'd hang him. If he knows anything, even with a fleet of lawyers around him, we might be able to shake something loose.
Just so.
Your call, Lieutenant.
She thought of rules, of due process, of the system she'd made herself an integral part of. And she thought of three dead women, three more she might be able to protect.
There's a reporter. Nadine first. Give it to her.
She couldn't stay with him. Eve knew a call would come, and it was best if she were home and alone when it did. She didn't think she would sleep, but she drifted into dreams. She dreamed first of murder. Sharon, Lola, Georgie, each of them smiling toward the camera. That instant of fear, a lightning bolt in the eyes before they flew back on sex-warmed sheets.
Daddy.
Lola had called him Daddy.
And Eve stumbled painfully into an older, more terrifying dream.
She was a good girl. She tried to be good, not to cause trouble. If you caused trouble, the cops came and got you and put you in a deep, dark hole where bugs skittered and spiders crept toward you on silent, slithery legs. She didn't have friends. If you had friends, you had to make up stories about where the bruises came from, how you were clumsy when you weren't clumsy, how you'd fallen when you hadn't fallen. Besides, they never lived in one place very long. If you did, the fucking social workers came nosing around asking questions. It was the fucking social workers who called the cops that put you away in that dark bug-crawling hole. Her daddy had warned her. So she was a good girl, without any friends, who moved from place to place when she was taken. But it didn't seem to make any difference. She could hear him coming. She always heard him. Even if she was sound asleep, the creeping shuffle of his bare feet on the floor woke her as quickly as a thunderclap.
Oh, please. Oh, please. Oh, please.
She would pray, but she wouldn't cry. If she cried, she was beaten, and he did the secret things anyway. The painful and secret thing that she knew, even at 5, was somehow bad. He told her she was good.
The whole time he did the secret thing, he would tell her she was good. But she knew she was bad, and she would be punished. Sometimes he